Talk Tank.
Talk Tank has been produced for Community Radio Tunim FM
102.3,
other community radio stations worldwide,
independent media and non-profit organizations worldwide.
Yeah, folks, good evening. I might just sort of welcome everybody out there, and good evening, guests. Good evening, guests.
Good evening, good evening, good evening.
Hi.
All right, yeah.
Our
good young
evening.
Co-host. Wonderful, Luna. We got to warn the listeners there is in some of the material is explicit content involved, so I'm going to pick the phone in a second and get started maybe with you, Tanya. Do you want to get started?
I said I'd start off with the Late Line program the other night. No new news, apparently, according to the... What am I reading here? The Indigenous Times, National Indigenous Times?
Yeah.
They did a 12-page piece on deconstructing that program and busting a few myths that were ignorantly expressed during it. Did you see it, Martin?
Can you say it again? What was the topic?
It was the Late Line program on Aboriginal violence in regional communities.
Oh, yeah.
You did see it?
I saw a fair bit. I'm not sure whether I exactly saw that one you're referring to, but I saw other kind of fair contributions and news snippets about it. Yeah, that's welcome. Go for it. Tell us what you work
on. Oh, it depends
about.
On what you're interested in. I mean,
well, the listeners are interested.
There are a few.
I'm totally disinterested.
Well. I thought that there was a few ones that are close to home with me. Just a quick rundown. Basically, they're saying that the issues aired by this program, that these things were new and shocking, which they are not. And
no, they're
we
not.
All know that. We can't assume that at all.
Oh, we can't hear you, Tanya.
Oh, well.
You're to the side. You're speaking.
Okay.
You're missing the
How's
mic.
That?
Yeah.
Yep, that's better.
Your spittle has to mix with everyone else's spittle on this mic.
I've already got it.
Because this show is full of saliva. Anyway.
About self-determination.
Yeah. Okay.
With the Aboriginal culture.
Can we translate all this gibberish they tell us into... that they've been sent to places no one else wants to live in this country, for a start.
Not at all. What they're actually saying, that the communities that they choose to live in, which are remote regional communities, they definitely want the right to live there.
Yeah.
They definitely want the right to define how they live there. And they definitely want more money.
Mm.
They don't think that not throwing money at the problem
well,
is
good. That clarifies the point.
It
the position.
Does. Mm. It's, that can be open for debate. Because it is taxpayers' money, bloody blah. I think.
I recall Tony Abbott on paternalism.
Mm.
Did they been in that Late Line program you're referring? Has Tony Abbott spoken there about his justification for some certain paternalism towards Aboriginals now? Because everything else failed. You know?
It's always been a matter of opinion. They say, was it maternity is a matter of fact and paternity is a matter of opinion? In any culture.
Yeah, okay.
This is a really good article. I wish I could just sort of read it verbatim, but I can't. The Indigenous communities should be closed down. Remote Indigenous communities should be closed down. That's another myth, they're saying.
They're economically
unviable.
Certainly
not, they're saying, as we have an absolute right to live out here. The sexual assault of young children is an age-old part of Aboriginal culture myth. They're saying absolutely not. I've heard several arguments on this. It is an assumption because of certain structures. Well, there are very strict laws against sex with prepubescent.
But it does get the media out, doesn't it?
It's sensational. That's what it is. It's like, this difference is alarming. Oh my God. You know,
you'll be astounded to find the same
initiation rites are perverse, and all of that sort of thing.
You will be astounded to find the same phenomenon happening now, today, in Atenco and in Oaxaca in Mexico.
Oh yeah.
You know,
there's
a displacement of people, and people stand up. No, they don't like it.
No.
And so therefore, the army comes there with tear gas, smoke grenades, stun grenades, and firearms. 13 people have been detained, 4 injured people, 5 bullet wounds, between 6 and 9 dead. The teachers' union office building was also broken into, and the installations of Radio Planton were destroyed, with 3 weeks until elections, and with the events in San Salvador Atenco still present, with 28 persons charged and jailed. Once again, the use of force instead of dialogue is the privileged response to citizens exercising their constitutional rights. Now, the
Aboriginals
haven't
to
really
do
stated their constitutional rights to that extent yet. No, with haven't been. Yeah, they have been blocked and blockaded and fought in demonstrations, but not to that extent, with people dying.
The international community see the Aboriginals as being far too passive in this country.
Yeah. It's also in Canada happening. I can verify that from Joe Broadhurst from CKUT Montreal. They're constantly having internet radio programs with the native Indians, you know, facing the same problems for the same reasons, for mining. Canada displaces Native Americans, you know. And it's not just Canada, it's
this, they had a very good point here about some of the, if they want property reforms. What was it, something about owning your own house in these communities, and how the system would have to be totally reformed and put under the umbrella of the federal government? And they're saying no way, because if this Land Rights Act in the Northern Territory is reformed, it's just another job to try and get property taken away from Aboriginal people.
And mining leases established without locking them
with no effort whatsoever.
Without court hearings.
No job to pay the mortgage off either.
Yeah.
Well, the illusion of this sort of thing happening. I mean, what?
Yeah.
You already own the land. Why would you have to buy it?
Yeah.
This is the thing. I mean,
initially
the land owns
you,
but you know, you're there already, and why bring economics from another system into something that was already sustainable? They quote, and this is my last point, they quote the Fisk report of 1980s.
Yeah.
And this is one of the myths. They're saying that the remote communities are not economically viable, and the Fisk report in the 80s said definitely they are viable in terms of local craft, in terms of food survival, and you know, like what were you saying about the paintings going to New York from the kids back in the 30s?
Mm. Oh, yeah, that was a message stick yesterday. It's a teacher came out to Noongar country down in Western Australia,
yeah.
Noongar people, and the amazing artwork from children not much older than Luna here, anywhere from 5 up to, say, 12 and a bit older maybe. And the artwork was just exquisite. It was fantastic. But they got taken off short to New York, and they've now found it back and exhibiting it in Australia. And some of the Noongar people want it to remain in Australia. And, it's money, but it's culture too. Do you want me to go on story about Dili?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Dili leaked documents suggesting Prime Minister Al-Khatiri had knowledge of weapons being supplied to an armed group of civilians to kill civilians opposed to Al-Khatiri's and his cabinet. The Interior Minister Rogerio Lobato, alias Roger the Lobster, and leaked documents both stating Big Al's ass was well and truly involved in the bloody heist.
Oh, yeah?
I thought at the time Janana Guzmao's decision to step down was reckless, but I thought it out, and I think he wants to avoid further turmoil in East Timor by putting pressure on Al-Khatiri's cabinet to support him with Big Al's resigning. Well, if you'd like great food, then Ashley with two E's at the Shannon will be providing for an exquisite and well-prepared concoction of food at the Shannon Hall on the 15th of July to support my friend and local lady Tula Andrianopoulos with the Alola Foundation as she supports the president of East Timor's wife, Kirsty Saw Guzmao. There are now 130,000 refugees in Dili. It's only $8 to get in at the Shannon Hall, and there will be live acts including the Shannon Jazz Trio, Terry Nicholson, who's another friend of Tula's also, and our very own Tuntable Creek Voices singing East Timorese songs. Hooray! An all-star jam also, so get into it. And for a surprising act, there's going to be a surprise act, someone famous. Shannon Hall, it's 15th July, $8. Brothers and sisters will be there. We talked about it last week, didn't we, Martin?
Yeah.
That tour going over to help out. So, yeah, it's all happening. She's hanging out with Guzmao, so I'm getting some inside stories.
Yeah.
On vaguely the same line, SOS Students of Sustainability, there's a conference in Brisbane on July the 9th. to the 15th. You can get more information on this. It's on studentsofsustainability.org. www.studentsofsustainability.org, all one word. And it's pretty much a communal thing. It's $160 for the full conference. That includes all access to workshops and forums, free camping, three vegan organic meals per day at the university in Brisbane. You can get $95 for a three-day pass, $50 for a one-day pass. It's volunteer-run, communal work sharing for the whole thing. Indigenous issues are being discussed. There's international speakers from Papua New Guinea, North Sumatra, Venezuela and Israel. We've got representatives from the Australian Conservation Foundation speaking, and issues like climate change, global economic justice, nuclear power, uranium mining, open space workshops, pre-organised forums, and that's happening July 9th to the 15th
in
Brisbane.
Where? At the uni?
At the university.
Give that URL.
www.studentsofsustainability.org.
All right.
And that is, I'll confirm that, yes, that's all one word, no gap in between Students of Sustainability.
All right. Can I then complement your contributions with my homework? All right, we'll go with the homework.
The purpose of this legislation is to further enhance the extremely successful border protection arrangements this country has in place.
A member for Brisbane
has nothing to do with listening to Indonesian politicians.
Well, I think it is, as you say, indisputable that we have taken into account the concerns of Indonesia.
Thank you.
Can I make the point? The government has a number of responsibilities. Yes, to live up to our obligations under the convention.
And not offend any Indonesians.
But we have border security issues, and we have our own national interest in keeping good relations with our neighbours. Yes, we are taking into account what the Indonesians want, because they're very helpful to us on border protection.
Changing our laws to make them stronger in Australia's national interest. In order to stop this smuggling, you do need the cooperation of Indonesia, Mr. Speaker. And everything that we have done is designed to maintain that cooperation, Mr. Speaker, but to suggest that that is an exercise in anything other than the sovereignty of this country is, to borrow a phrase used by the Leader of the Opposition earlier, plainly ludicrous.
Nothing the government says about its tough talk on terrorism will convince a couple of its backbenchers or Labour that these new asylum laws are not about responding to pressure from Jakarta.
It's the embarrassment of his own making. The embarrassment of the back down is nothing to what's about to happen on the international stage if John Howard goes ahead and makes us the only country that will change our law because one of our friends gets cranky.
Bilateral relations were more important than a country's individual laws.
This bill is very important to us, and we will keep talking.
I did indicate recently that the government has bent over backwards. I'll feel at liberty to share with you just how much we have offered.
Senator Vanstone says she's bending over backwards.
Clearly there are some strongly held views, but no one should be under any mistake. There are very strongly held views in the majority of our party room that this bill should proceed. The majority of our party room understands that our strong stance on border protection is something Australia is grateful for and has consistently supported at elections. And the majority of the party room also understands that Indonesia has been a very helpful partner in this region.
And will she now provide an absolute guarantee that families and children will be placed in the community rather than in the detention centre in Nauru?
The Prime Minister is a very, very patient man.
We cannot afford to start to see the numbers coming back like they used to. Because when you see children dying in clinics on Saibai Island from meningitis and other diseases, Japanese encephalitis and things like that, that have just come across from Papua New Guinea and other places, you can understand the profound concerns of the families who are living up in those areas. The kids are there every day of the week. That's their home. And so they've got to be concerned and they've got to be protected. And they are untreated, unfortunately, from where they come from. Tuberculosis is another one. And AIDS is another one. and when they come across, it exposes those people living on those outer fringes of Australia.
I too have a remarkable degree of patience. Sometimes I surprise myself.
This bill, whatever concessions they offer, will still involve taking people out of Australia and dumping them in another country. Say if they get a concession as to whether children will be detained or whether they'll be free. When that's actually implemented, it won't be implemented under Australian law. It'll be implemented at the total discretion of the government of Nauru. So it doesn't matter what concessions can be claimed to be given during all of this. Ultimately, we're saying this parliament won't be in control. Indonesia never offers to change their criminal law because they say it's their country and it's their law. We should say exactly the same back when they don't like how our immigration law operates.
Nothing the government says about its tough talk on terrorism will convince a couple of its backbenchers or Labor that these new asylum laws are not about responding to pressure from Jakarta.
I'm a patient man, a very patient man. It's been my habit to go to Indonesia and try to do that.
Terrorism.
All right, here we're back on air here. Thanks for ringing in. There's a contributor who mentioned that the rebel commander has been trained by Australian forces, and you can find out more about that reading up on John Pilger's material about East Timor, the training of Australian army training this guy, and subsequently also he's been trained, I think, or before with the Indonesian army. And that is a contentious bit which hasn't been really in the mainstream media really put into its perspective, I think.
Roger the Lobster.
The contributor will himself perhaps go into this topic tomorrow between 12 and 2 on the WebClaw program.
It's sounding a lot more like a very special relationship with Indonesia, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extremely special. We've got more on that later on.
And the weapons made in Sydney.
Yeah. Well, no, I did my audio bit. It's your turn again.
I've got a piece about a thing called Gaia University.
What is
that? Gaia? Gaia University?
Oh, Gaia, yeah.
Yes.
Not Gaga.
They're just starting up. It's just started up, and the first students have just started their program this term,
right?
Like in the last few days, even. I wrote away and said, why don't we have one of these in Nimbin? They wrote back very enthusiastic, said, yeah. I said, the infrastructure's already here. They said, it certainly is. So maybe, just maybe, we'll have. Do you know about Stephen and Ina May Gaskin from the farm in Tennessee? That's where the first course is starting up. There's also in Germany. There's one other branch of the university, and it's just spreading. It's like a great big octopusy thing spreading.
Yeah.
It's not a great www.gaiauniversity.org.
.org. Gaia University .org. All small casing. Low casing.
Yep. And it's about sustainable living, home building, home owner building.
Is this still viable, sustainable?
Totally.
I thought I need to jump the universe and then I'll choose another one. Different physical laws.
It's about reparation. It's about, it's covering all of these issues.
Earth
and it's very realistic. It's not a hippie trippy trip anymore.
Not a trip
anymore. And they
are an escape route for some.
It's a university course.
Future
it's
life.
Masters in science, Bachelor of Applied Science
right.
type courses. Exactly.
Fair enough,
very serious and actually happening.
That's wonderful.
Next.
Slave to chains, whips and honey badgers. Yep, a descendant of England's first slave trader has knelt in chains in front of a crowd of 25,000 Africans and asked for forgiveness for his ancestors' actions. Yep, the chap's relo, John Hawkins, was Francis Drake's cousin and kidnapped Africans to sell as slaves in Europe and America. Anyway, he felt very much guilty, this 37-year-old Andrew Hawkins, a Cornish youth worker, travelled with a British Christian organisation and apologised in German, French and American, or English if you like, at a cultural festival in Gambia, the former Western African British colony. The Gambian vice president removed his chains, smeared honey over his nether regions and was buried him head deep in a termite mound. Well, not really, she forgave him. But he threw his chains back on and marched frantically through a rural village as part of reconciliation walk. Good on you, mate. We keep the honey badger. He's yours.
That's how they get married in Gambia.
I like the idea of putting honey on your nether regions, so you could forgive the ants.
Remember, it's an explicit material program, so be warned, listeners.
This is why Gambia is no longer part of Senegal, I believe. They tried to unite those two countries, but it failed very dismally. And now you've got Senegal with a great big hole in the middle of it, and I believe that's the Gambia.
Me too.
Hi. You too. Dear. All right.
Africa news.
More African news. Yeah.
Peace talks in the Sudan. And what is it? The Eastern Rebels are withdrawing quite happily from Khayortum. Is that how they call it? That sounds great. Israeli law courts are actually, the judicial court there is actually recognising the transitional federal government existing at the moment as official and happening and structural and important. Yeah.
Mm.
Also, I read one article, whether I couldn't find any backup articles about it, but they said that AIDS rates are dropping in Kenya.
Oh, yeah.
So because of abstinence.
You think they get a grip on it. Hey, measures. Hey, watch out with that microphone, please.
It's the only thing that ever really does reduce the spread of AIDS is the change in people's habits. Mm. I think you'll find. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just about everywhere. You look at the groups that are most susceptible, and they seem to be the ones that are taking all the precautions. It's just that, well, yeah, the groups that are susceptible are taking some of the precautions, but not all of them. And there's no greater precaution than that one. Yeah. Just a late-breaking one from today, too. I noticed in the news Aaron Spelling's dead.
Who?
Aaron Spelling.
Yeah, tell us about him.
He was the... Okay, Aaron Spelling did some really bad television, like Melrose Place and all of those American series that we knew to hate. He was very much an American dream. He arrived in Hollywood in the 1950s virtually penniless.
Worked himself up.
A Jew boy who had had a nervous breakdown at age 8 from the racial persecution, and he said that was where his creative flair sparked. But within about 10 years, Aaron Spelling had amassed a personal fortune of about $300 million, lived in one of the grandest places in Hollywood, and among his, one that really is to his credit, The Boy in the Bubble, the first John Travolta movie I ever saw, and apparently John Travolta's first hit movie was an Aaron Spelling as well as all those countless American series that we either loved or hated.
So are we going to get some dished up from the ABC soon?
I think we're going to get a lot of. You can expect a lot of rehashed Melrose Place in dedication to over the next few weeks.
Well, that means
possibly worse.
Yeah, that means I don't need to buy any electronic soap for the next few weeks. Eh?
No, not at all.
I have noticed North Korea's back in the picture with a missile. Let's have a listen to what I prepared here. Probably best to bounce from that. Then you know what I mean.
This was the last time North Korea launched a long-range missile. It had a range of 2,000 kilometers. Now it's believed the North Koreans have developed a missile that could travel three times further, one that could reach the U.S. state of Alaska.
It's possible that this flight test, if it's carried out and if it's successful, will indicate that the North Koreans, for the first time, have the capability to hit targets in continental U.S.
That grim possibility has the U.S. deeply concerned. According to a Washington newspaper, the U.S. has activated a defense system designed to intercept incoming missiles.
Yeah, you heard there's another very important counterfeit thing this week. North Korea, you know, Kim Jong-il got sick of trying his videotapes to send to Al Jazeera, so he built missiles instead in the meantime.
It's not even a real missile. It's a big cardboard cutout. It's going to cost America heaps, man.
You know, I thought that too. You know, just put up a papier-mâché thing, you know, and scare their shits out of Condoleezza Rice.
They shit themselves. They're putting the hattery over the White House again today. Yeah. And I think the last count I got was about $480 million they're going to give if they pull the papier-mâché down.
I'd say, bring it on, Kim. Bring it on to Melbourne Carnival, mate.
Mate, we're next Mardi Gras. We're going to put one up at the back of the school on the Oval. Yeah. I reckon it's going to be worth a few million.
But there's another sinister thought along the lines from the experts, because if you reach 9.8G, that means you can lift off the planet.
Yeah.
That's what you can now with this big new thing.
Yeah.
You can actually just send a few gallon drops full of you know, bolts and nuts up there, empty them out into the geostationary satellite orbit and let nature or the mathematics of it all take its own course. You know?
I reckon.
And that's the real threat, you know.
That's job creation. Good on you, Mark. Well, but not, I think nothing, you know, like, nothing's going to happen.
You can
mate.
Use compass again for your shipping
mate,
routes, you know.
Mate, paper mache doesn't fly. It's not aerodynamic.
Good on you, Kim.
Yeah. Go for it, mate. He's winning the lotto.
Okay, we're back here on live. So what do you think, paper mache or real threat?
Oh, you're talking about our latest lot in the United States?
The missile crisis with North Korean missile ready to go and destroy Anchorage or Melbourne or... Yeah, I don't think they're after that.
That's Kim Il's latest excuse, isn't it? That they were just paper mache ones after all?
Kim is a hard case. You know, I've watched Kim for 5 years. Before September 11, he had no problems. After September 11, he always lost against Bin Laden in the effectiveness of getting anything out in the media. Bin Laden always got the tapes into Al Jazeera first, and Kim got rejected. And that made him really angry. And since then, he grows missiles instead of making tapes. And now he's got this big missile, you know, the big paper mache missile. And I reckon it's a cheap effort for a few hundred million dollars US subsidies on trade and energy, you know.
What's the US got to show for it? 8 paper mache terrorists that just
yeah, well, the US
that never posed a real danger.
The US tries to keep the hegemony going there, and it's obvious that the hegemony is not there anymore, you know, here in Southeast Asia. And that's why we're in the picture so much, you know.
Oh, think of the hegemony when Bin Laden went on tape saying, look, even though you've jailed, what's his name?
Kim Jong-un.
No, the only guy that they've actually jailed over 9/11. What's that fellow's name?
Guy in America, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't involved.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be killed, and they didn't kill him.
And Osama's on telly saying he had nothing to do with it. No, the only person that had anything to do with it that you still haven't got is here, right here. It's me.
No, you really
I did it, and you haven't got me yet.
That's right. He frustrated everybody. Everybody who wanted to punish him couldn't punish him in the end, you know, because he punished himself.
Also in Southeast Asia, well, North Korea's not exactly Southeast Asia, but jungle appeasement phase. Howard's jasmine left nostril beasting Jakarta. Our grovelling, tulip-tipping, tipsy leader John Howard has sucked up to our angsty tropical neighbours once again this week, my friends. Human rights? No probs for Howard. No coins found there. Distrustful votes here? Yeah, possibly. But Howard still bowed low towards the vile whiff of dog poo this week over asylum seekers from West Papua. President Silly Bang Bang Banana, thanks Paul, ran Howard and personally guaranteed the safety of the 42 Papuans if they were returned to West Papua. Howard's sending of boat folk to Narua, which is on the equator, is opposed by me, Martin, Tanya, Paul, Josephina, Luna, Labor, and some Libs even. Don't worry, bank interest will rise anyhow. I'll stand for Prime Minister. Free trips to Bali, even if you're not a bogan in the footy team.
Oh, you naughty boy. Well, we've got this beautiful music I want to share with you, so I'll switch the mics off for a second, you can hear it. Okay. Oh, wonderful. Let's keep going then on this.
What a piece of luck.
This ain't a music program, hey?
Music about a Martin's program.
It transmits through water or something, so it sounds, doesn't it? Yeah, well, I've got more prepared if you would want to have a breather from yourselves.
We could definitely do with a break from ourselves, yeah.
Well, I've got a wonderful thing here lined up from the UK. I've got to just explain what it is. And switch the buttons around. Where is it? Yeah, it's called Totally Blanket. It's lifted off DIYmedia.net. www.diymedia, one word, .net, all smaller, lower casing. And it's done by someone who is anonymous from, where did I write it down somewhere, the web address, apart from the where it would be credits. Anyway, it's good, I just switch it on, I guess, hey?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I'm going to turn this one off for now.
I want to say a little word about the development of social justice and our commitment to ignorance is absolutely crucial here. unless our values are underpinned by some sort of announcement that Tony Blair and I engage in frightening children, we are not going to frighten and upset people. And we can't be scaring people to death unnecessarily. But at the end of the day, it's the job of government. In fact, it's the most fundamental job of government to scare the electorate. So Tony Blair and I were offering hard drugs to kids on the street. When they've run out of money, Tony would make them cry. He would beat them and threaten them with needles. Anything goes with children. So we're treating the public as extraordinarily stupid children. They can't actually be persuaded to embrace progressive and radical totalitarian policies without being high on crack. So we're promoting crack. And it is crucial that we reinforce our commitment to the politics of Hitler and Stalin and Mussolini and Franco, and to demand that our ideas oppress and stamp on the freedom to say and do what you like. I've been working on this for years. An oppressive era. And we can build on that. So the introduction of identity cards is not simply because we want more personal monitoring. It's about affirming a commitment to much tougher rules, much tougher tracking, much tougher penalties for talking about, say, freedom or peace. And if we link that to electronic surveillance, which we are doing now, so you can check people's economic and personal details, then I believe we can fuck people over further. And the threat of terrorism is absolutely critical to building this totalitarian vision.
Apologize, I almost cut it in the middle out. Well, for people who missed this one, go to diymedia.net and check it out. Totally blanket. It's only a small file, 3.5 megabytes, I think, believe. And I will play it later at the end of the program, complete again, undisturbed. I bounced into this machine here for accidental reason, and therefore we're back to life. And the next item, shall we go into the Senate? No. What have you got, Tanya?
There's been a big conference in Madagascar about ecological and economic issues. It's becoming pretty important in Africa to start thinking about these things, and apparently there's been some... sorry, I'm just getting my hair pulled. there's been some progress in these areas. Also in the Amazon, there's a big national park being declared, but only on paper, they say, but... 1.84 million hectares of rainforest is off limits for development.
I heard they have the problem to police it. You know, any of those Amazon projects suffers that.
Of course, but it's nice that they're saying it.
There's not enough accountability measures put in, and no personnel to police them.
Technology's made them a lot more policeable.
Yeah, but once they're there, they say we're ranchers. We're not having anything to do with it. And then there's two groups of ranchers. One who push out the indigenous people.
Yeah, the globalised franchises.
Them, you know, with themselves. You know.
The remote sensing does help, like the land clearing in New South Wales or Queensland, like Paul's saying, but the globalised franchises, the big beef industry, they're kicking out the smaller ranches.
It's outside driven, that's what I suspect.
In our own backyard here, I just want to, from the Nimbin Environment Centre, I'd sort of do a piece for the day. It's just recently informed of a new project to create a large dam along the border of Mount Warning National Park and into Mebane. It's, you know, some people might have heard of this before, but the dam area would spread from Mebane camping ground to Pretty Gully, where the dam wall would be situated.
Uh-huh.
This would, in effect, cut the wildlife corridor from Mount Warning National Park to the border ranges.
We fought for this about 10 years ago up in Mebane, and we had quite a peaceful resolution at that time. And now they're going to do this. It's ridiculous. There are some beautiful trees up there, quite old trees. And elephant graveyards everywhere, by the way, as well, like the old growth trees. And what a ridiculous idea. But do we have alternatives? What are our alternatives?
I'm not sure. More on that?
No, we've got some Shamrock news if you want it now. Or do you want
No,
it
I want, yeah, after mine.
Yep.
Okay. Young workers say, up yours, Howard. Written by Kiras Janik Geelong. Submitted by Anonymous on Friday, 2006, 23rd, at 10:30 a.m. Now, I lifted this from sydneyindemedia.org newswire. And it says here, more than 80 people, including young workers from the Gold Coast, Perth, Sydney, Melbourne, joined local participants at Geelong Trades Hall on June 17th for the, quote, Up Yours, Howard, Young Workers Conference, unquote. The conference was initiated by the socialist youth organization Resistance and sponsored by Geelong Trades Hall Council as part of the ongoing fight back against the Howard government's work choices legislation.
And the cast of Grange Hill.
Yep.
The cleaners are also striking all the major cities and all the major CBD buildings. I thought that was beautiful.
It's going to get messy, yeah.
Oh, look, hey. If you can't clean up after yourselves, honey, what are you doing in a major business building, honestly? But yeah, I think that's a good thing for the unions. I think that's a very, very interesting move, and it really strikes at the heart of things, doesn't it?
It's a really great class of business and a really competitive business movement we have in Australia that stands up crying poor mouth because sometime in the last fortnight, Labor actually stood up on an industrial policy and distinguished itself from the government. and that if there's a result next election, that they might actually have a real change.
Well, that leads us straight to the Senate thing.
They'll be blaming it on the incompetency of their bloody business.
Power in a democracy is shared normally. It's devolved, you know. What do you call it? Devolution of power makes it more democratic, no? in the old traditional sense of understanding, when we still had the constitution and laws and the UN and all that.
Now, and we weren't gagged.
We've been steamed over by Howard lately, but no one's screaming. No one is screaming except these guys here. So I thought I'd feed that in to just update everyone, and then we can bounce off it if you want. It's only 39.
Will disappear, the 10 which remain will all be chaired by government senators.
Now the Australian people have given the coalition a majority, we think the committee structure should more properly reflect that democratic reality.
That's fundamentally about emasculating the Senate, and I think people ought to be outraged at this because it will remove a check on executive government.
Labor says the government will get to decide the number and scope of inquiries.
Like all instruments of accountability in this country, this government's trashing it.
He says the move in the Senate is an evil act.
An act of evil is to give hyperbole a whole new meaning.
Having the parliament sidelined and the decisions being made in the Prime Minister's office and hurried through those three democratic institutions to the ultimate conclusion because they've got the numbers.
The Senate overall has always been proportional. That is, there is a sharing of responsibility and power, if you like, in the Senate according to the numbers. But the government's really overridden that principle and simply taken control.
Okay, we're back on here. So everyone got that. Bob Brown made it quite clear in the last statement. What do you think?
Isn't this a step closer to Hitler? Isn't it the
Mussolini,
step
after Stalin, after and everyone
the
else on that.
After the, yeah. The what is it? What's that word? No, the other one. I'll think about it a minute. Yeah.
Basically, the first step is taken when Australian style Westminster government, and the doctrine of the separation of powers between the executive and the state, is replaced with the American style executive government, where Congress is just a rubber stamp, and where the instruments of state are virtually under the direct control of the minister, even their day-to-day running, which is not the Westminster way of running things, not the Australian democratic way of running things. It's a bit of the American way of running things, and as Tony says, it was a lot of Adolf, Uncle Joe, and Duchesne's way of running things.
These are post-sedition sort of laws, you know. After sedition comes gagging the Senate, or simultaneously even. But it's the same sort of thing. It's where can people get themselves represented here.
Yeah.
They backed down on the Snowy River Dam thing. How? What got through? That's what I wanted to know before when I was talking about it a few weeks ago. What actually got through to them?
The loss of
how do we do that again?
The loss of American hegemony here in Southeast Asia. It's because of the Iraq War. That's the reason behind it, in my view. It undermined everything of the neoconservative agenda. That troubled some war. And the other one in Afghanistan is not ending. And the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is inflaming ever more. It's all gone wrong for as far as foreign policy of America goes.
Who was the woman? Who was the woman who said that George Bush and Tony Blair are the greatest recruiters for Al Qaeda?
That's Cindy Sheehan.
That is so much rung true.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all the terrorists. All the great terrorists today are being granted hope.
We're working on that one. Yeah. There will be a few things added to that statement.
You know, they had to bring people in from Saudi Arabia to fly planes into American buildings, you know, 5 years ago. Now you've just got to go around the corner and just find a few guys.
Yeah, but it's on a serious note, there's things happening, and this is the first incident of its kind. I might just play that to you. It's only a minute 30, bringing you up to scratch on how we're going to kill Iraqi bodyguards in Iraq.
The funeral of the Iraqi bodyguard killed in the shooting incident has been held in Baghdad. His death sparked outrage in Iraq, with the trade minister demanding an apology and compensation from Australia. John Howard says he regrets the man's death, but won't say sorry until he knows the full story.
Australian soldiers always behave in a very professional manner. And my operating assumption until I have been told otherwise is that Australian soldiers always do the right thing.
Yeah, well, that's enough now.
By who? They do the right thing by who?
Yeah, by John Howard, it's enough. Yeah. He will apologise eventually and that will make up for all the bad.
Look, you know, in an army, in an institution where bullying was at times as rife as that one, but my soldiers will always do the right thing. It's very quaint.
Exactly, post-scriptum.
It's a couple of months until 2007. This is when the troops are meant to be out. It's July now, nearly July now. Yeah, I mean, how are we going to do it?
No, that's
We've
not going
to... We've got to do it. We've got to do it.
So...
All the court cases in America are interesting about the bringing to bear the justice system on the American soldiers, killing civilians. Very interesting, if you're following that.
Well, they say 40,000, some say 200,000 people directly and indirectly, and themselves have 2,500 or a bit more.
Well, aside from the scapegoatism, maybe it will make some changes in the way we actually train... army.
Yeah, but every fascist
and combat personnel.
Every fascist leader, and that's at the moment sort of a spread on around the coalition of the fascist leaders, has used wars and violence in order to stay in power, just simply as that, for no other reason.
It's the ballast, isn't it?
It's just it allows you to stay on the steering wheel. You know, you've got the glove, the gun.
It's the ballast. It's the weight at the end of.
It's holding the gun at us and at others. And says, if you don't behave, you know, I'm going to shoot you, you know. You're going to be politically dead.
Look,
you're going to be picked up for being a terrorist.
Yeah, well, you're not in the interest of the national security supporting me. That's more the argument that they bring up.
All right. This is something that was a little bit topical with some people earlier in the week, I know, who are public servants today in Howard's public service and even in Mr. Yemma's public service, is the freedom from harassment. How free are you really from harassment in a public service where the biggest danger you've got is a false complaint being laid against you than somebody actually bothering you in your day-to-day work? This is what the government does with the way it's supposed to protect its employees. Why are we sitting here scratching our heads, wondering why they do the same thing with the laws that are intended to a protected citizens?
Yeah, well, they're testing it first. If the law doesn't fit, then change it, you know, until it fits.
The fact of the matter is the government did very well out of bullying in its own public service.
Yeah.
It gave it more of the day-to-day control that it's really not entitled to under the Westminster system. And when they don't want to take it away, they just replace it with something that's got a different name. But it's still there. Yeah.
And what is it called? Well. They're more crazy or what?
Yeah.
Will we have an era where we're talking about Howardism and Bushism in the future?
The history books will be, you find these books like in the intelligence agencies, they've got all these blacked out bits on it, you know. That's their history.
Look,
I spent 12 years working in an arm of the Australian Public Service where the only people who seem to be promoted are getting ahead.
Hang on, this is a public, you know, you're on public radio, man.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll state it publicly. Lots of people know where I used to work.
All right.
And I'll tell you publicly that the only people who ever got ahead in my old workplace were either under old Keating government style enterprise agreements or new Howard government style AWUs. They're the only people that got ahead there.
Yeah. They will be replacing them by ACWAs, which are Australian Cannabis Workers Agreements.
Yes.
And furthermore, I want to point out that we did some homework on this. The government is about to spend $50 million on a porn filter, which is actually a tracking device for computer-connected people, you know.
Lawyers are also getting the security check happening.
Celebrities. Yeah, security
companies. I used to go out with this lawyer in university who is now, you know, top barrister in Sydney, and he used to be a left politician in the university grounds. He's going to get security checked. You know, people are... That's interesting, and the lawyer that was just picked up for the child sex allegations, I mean, it's one of those things, like, this is a top lawyer in Sydney.
Yeah.
Are these allegations false? Did this guy actually get caught? Or is it just, you know, you don't know. This is a sad thing. This guy could be guilty of sin, or he could be innocent, and we, the public, wouldn't know the bloody difference because of the way things are at the moment.
Remember, the John Marsden allegations turned out to be false.
Well, I'll skip the porn filter story.
Can I do another Howard thing?
Yeah, we're
just
finishing the story.
Stem cell research, Howard's saying no. Cabinet ministers are saying no. You know, we don't think we should be creating embryos for the purpose of experimentation. Mm. I think, well, if scientists want to do that, they should use their own sperm, their own eggs.
Why not? Yeah.
Well, you know, it brings to bear the actual... You know, the nadir of the argument. Victoria are going to enact their own legislation on the subject to keep on going with their research. They host some very top scientists there, apparently. Open for debate. I'm neutral on it. I think a lot of good could be done, but I'm basically against invasive surgery. I don't like the ideas of embryos being used. But I am very interested in the spinal cord research they're doing. But, yeah, it's open for debate.
Right. Your last words, guys, because then I'm going to play Brian Holt's contribution from South Africa, and after that it's Luna's turn after that. So you want to say goodbye to the audience out there?
Sorry, Andy Warhol's wig was auctioned for
$10,800
US.
I'm going to cut you off because you're going to... It's not working, mate.
It's just the wig.
Sorry, I was about to say, it's not an awful lot of that's for the lot because they auctioned everything Andy Warhol owned, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, opened it publicly just after...
I didn't know he wore a wig.
All right.
Oh, it was very much Andy's wig-wearing stage, the later part of his life.
Okay.
Boy.
Well, we'll come in after this.
We miss you, Andy, and we'll miss you, Aaron.
I'm going to play Brian Howard's contribution from Port Elizabeth. We'll have a short word after that on what he does and why I'm playing it. So.
Hi, it's good to have you with us on NIM FM. I am Brian Howard with Reflections. The word accident typically connotes an unfortunate event where physical harm or damage is unintentionally brought about. But did you know that the word accident was originally used to describe an event that is without apparent cause or is unexpected, something that happens as a result of chance, the working of fortune, as in accident accounts for much in life. So winning the lottery can correctly be described as an accident. This makes sense, given that statistically, you or I stand a far greater chance of being struck by lightning than we do of winning a lottery. The most ancient metaphysical belief system known to mankind holds that you and I chose our parents. In other words, even before you were born, your spirit entity made a conscious decision to manifest as a human being at a specific place, date, and time, and within a chosen family or to a particular mother. Put differently, you took on a human body by choice, and the circumstances of your birth were not accidental at all. If anything, you and I decided to take on a human body within a cultural and socio-economic milieu designed to help us learn a sequence of lessons. Life, then, is viewed as a challenging series of spiritual tests. This view places the onus of our spiritual, intellectual, and moral growth squarely on our shoulders. In essence, it refutes the comfortable notion that whatever happens, happens, and that we have little, if any, control over the so-called accidental circumstances and conditions of our lives. You have a choice. You can either decide to simply give up and attribute all your unpleasant trials and tribulations to factors and forces beyond your control. On the other hand, you can accept the notion that you are indeed the captain of your ship and make a conscious effort to entertain only those thoughts and actions that will contribute to your moving in your desired direction. Either way, the laws of cause and effect will continue to operate. High expectations, high achievement. Low expectations, low achievement. There's no escaping the words in Galatians 6 verse 7. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Most folks would rather go through life grumbling, God, why me? Not you. Knowing that even before you were born, your Creator had a mission, a plan for you, you prefer to respond to the challenges of existence with an attitude of, God, try me. Confident in the knowledge that you are the master of your fate, you can accept that there will continue to be chance or accidental events in your life, but these will constitute an ever-decreasing influence. I have memorized a quotation that helps me, and I know will assist you in your quest to gain more control over the so-called accidents of life. Whatever you vividly imagine, ardently desire, sincerely believe, and enthusiastically act upon, must inevitably come to pass.
Well, thank you, Brian. Whatever you think about Brian, I want to just draw your attention to him because he does this to raise funds and to get attention drawn to his work at the St. Francis Hospice based in Port Elizabeth, South Africa, which provides palliative care for 500 terminally ill cancer, motor neuron and HIV/AIDS patients. And over 90% of the patients cannot afford to pay anything in that at all, so they need support there. The St. Francis Hospice relies on the goodwill of people like you listeners out there. And if you'd like to receive a hard copy of his series of reflections, you can help the hospice by sending an email to Brian, and I'll give you the email address. B. Howard, it's one word, small caption, B, like Berta or Brian, B. Howard at progen.co.za. I spell progen.co.za. B. Howard at progen.co.za. Send him an email and tell him what you think about it, and maybe there's a way that the hospice can get some support from people around. Thank you for sharing it, Brian. And that brings us to the last item here on the show. So, you ready, Luna? Okay, Luna, go ahead.
Hello, my name is Luna. I can read with my eyes shut.
You can read with your eyes shut? Oh, tell us more. Come on, tell us a bit more. How do you do it?
Good.
And how do you do the reading with your closed, with your shut eyes?
I've learned it.
Can you see through your lids? Closed lids and you can see through it?
Yeah.
Like X-ray vision?
Yeah.
What? Like the X-Men?
No.
All right, so have you got any suggestions for the listeners out there? You want to tell the people out there something good from here, from Nimbim, from your world?
Today I saw this huge snake on Gregory's roof. Oh. Gregory's a friend of my mum's. It was really fat.
How big? How large?
About 3 meters and a half.
Wow.
Well, that's not really how fat, just...
Long?
Fat. Yeah.
What kind? Do you know what kind of snake?
Yes, it's a carpet snake.
Carpet snake, all right.
Well, they don't have any poison. Whoa. They can hurt you, though.
No, they're good. They're good. They keep rats out of
my Okay, my friend, we need to say goodbye to everyone out there. I think the logo is going to chop us out here otherwise.
Yeah.
So, last words, guys. Okay, I decide because it's going to get cut off.
Anyway, Paradise Valley is at the end of Clifton Road.
Yeah. I hope John Howard gets a carpet snake in the roof.
We have green snakes there.
Okay, that's it. done. Thank you for listening to Talk Tank. You can visit our website, nimbinradiomedia.libsyn.com. Libsyn as in Liberated Syndicate. And check out other programs of Community Radio 2 NIM FM. Or you can write to us, nimfm@nimfm.org, all small casing. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time.